Ave Glover and his guests, and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Thank you very much, Wendy, and welcome back to the Drive Time, everybody. As per request, here is the Nylons with an a cappella version of O Canada right here on Northumberland 89.7. It's Canada Day. Happy Canada Day. Hey, those burgers might be burning.
Sons command, with glowing hearts we see thee rise, the true North, strong and free. From far and wide, O Canada, we stand on guard for thee. Etabelle, deux fois trompés, protégera nos foyers. Stand on guard for thee, Canada.
And that was the Nylons. Not, I mean, what's more Canadian than that, folks? Joining me in the studio right now is our good friend Rob Washburn, professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. And we're going to talk about Canada Day, but we're talking about Cobourg-specific stories for Canada Day. Rob, welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me, Dave, and happy Canada Day.
Happy Canada Day to you too, sir. And I know we got you out of here during the dinner hour, so thanks for spending your dinner hour with us here at Northumberland 89.7. Sorry, Russell Peters just tried to step all over our conversation. Anyway, we're going to be talking about James Cobourg. So why don't you kick it off for us, Rob, and just give us a quick intro to what we're talking about today, and we'll get on with it.
Dave, I wanted to talk about Northumberland County history and what an amazing place Northumberland County is in terms of Canada's development. It's hard to believe, but we're right now sitting in probably one of the major cradles of this great country in terms of history, of how this country was developed. It's hard to believe, but Samuel de Champlain wrote about being on Rice Lake back in 1615 in his diaries.
Really?
That's right. And he was part of a Huron party that was on its way to meet with the Iroquois. And he talks about coming into Rice Lake and all the amazing fields of rice that there were on along the coast. Now, we're not sure whether he was traveling down the Trent-Severn system or whether he stopped and went from Butley and took the portage. There was a very famous portage down through to the lake. So we're not sure which way he exited, but we definitely know that he was
now,
in Rice Lake.
Is that portage? I mean, that's Burnham Street, essentially, right? Like, my understanding from talking to a resident who lives on Burnham Street, as you go north of the 401, that's one of the oldest roads in Ontario. That stretch of road there, that's the same original path, because the road goes right to Rice Lake, right?
Mm-hmm.
It kind of ends there.
Yep.
So that could very well be that portage you're speaking
of. It could, or there was another one that was really important as well that was down near Butley, and it went from the western tip down through to where the Ganaraska meets the lake, and that was also another portage. But what you're talking about, yes, absolutely, and was one of the more famous roads that was developed. It was one of the first because it's directly across from the Otonabee River.
Right.
And so anybody that was traveling that way, they would use that pathway. But later on, because of the mud and that kind of thing, what they did was they split logs in half, put half logs all the way up, and it became what was called the Plank Road for many, many years in the early 19th century.
Wow.
Yeah.
But so Cobourg's history, I mean, that's 300 years ago, 400 years ago now.
Well, it actually dates back 9,000 years. The rice fields were a major source of food for the First Nations in this area. And also there was an archaeological dig done in the 1970s, and they found artifacts dating back 9,000 years up in that area. Also, it was a sacred area for the First Nations as well. And that would become really important later when Alderville was formed. I don't know if you know much about Alderville and its formation.
I don't know enough about it. I'm going to say that. I should know more, and I've extended an invitation to the executive up there. I'm trying to get the chief on to come on and talk to us about Alderville and the history of it, and maybe this will be an instigator.
It's an amazing history. They were originally from the Bay of Quinte area, and what we're talking about is they were the descendants of the Algonquin Nation, and they were called the Mississauga Ojibwe, but that was more of a French-Canadian First Nations sort of mixture of names. But anyway, they were allied with the Hurons against the Iroquois in their history. But going back, they were originally settled in the Bay of Quinte area. And then in the early 19th century, with the arrival of the Methodists in that area, they put them on a reserve on Grape Island. I don't know if you're familiar with that in the Bay of Quinte, but it was a rather small island. All the families lived there. They lived there until 1837, when the Alderville Reserve was created, and then they moved them from Grape Island to Alderville between 1839 and 1855.
Now, is that because Grape Island was basically isolated and they wanted to...
Well, what had happened was that there was disease and people were getting sick. And because they were on the island, they were infecting each other. The health wasn't very good. And they asked that they could be moved. And so they went up to the Alderville, the newly created Alderville Reserve. And because it was considered a sacred place, a healing place, that's why they agreed to go. One of the reasons, at least, that they agreed to go. But it's fascinating. Back in the 19th century, there were 15 families that basically moved up. There was only several hundred people. It was the Beaver family, the Crow family, Simpsons, and the Sundays. And those are names I'm sure that you would recognize if you were to go up there today. Anyway, once they moved up there, they settled. They started to develop the area, and their history has continued through to today.
Well, and the area is still really known for its healing as well. I mean, that's why the spas are locating up in that area,
because
of the spring water. And, I mean, one of the things I found fascinating when I was reading about Cobourg's early history was the number of Americans that were coming across the lake for our ozone. They were talking about coming over here, and we've got better quality ozone, and there's a lot of fresh healing waters around here. Same thing with the First Nations and being able to exploit that as well. So, they call us the wellness center. I mean, Cobourg wants to be the wellness capital of Ontario, but I think we're sort of reigniting something that's been known for probably close to 200 years.
No, absolutely. You're right. You're right to say that. It's quite interesting. I mean, the Americans coming over, they were obviously very wealthy people. They would come across many of our larger homes and buildings, for example, Brookside. It was an American-built home.
And Sidbrook as well, which is located on the south side, across from them, basically.
And we were like the Muskoka is today. You know, this rich people getaway place. Come here. The beaches were beautiful. The ozone, the healing waters. It was a big attraction back in the day. Yeah, fascinating.
It is fascinating. Well, James Cockburn, who is Cockburn's father of Confederation, in 1848, the Parliament of West Canada, formerly Upper Canada, was established, and Cobourg was then part of the riding of West Northumberland, which we're now still part of West Northumberland. Accepting the nomination of 350 petitioners, James Cockburn was elected into this parliament in 1861 and thus began his illustrious political career. But an interesting side note here, because when they were redistributing the boundaries again this time around, and they wanted to get rid of the Northumberland part of the riding name. They wanted to completely get rid of it. And it was a lot of very knowledgeable people here in this part of the riding, a lot of historians, a lot of local historians, and they all were able to sway our current Member of Parliament, Rick Norlock, into making sure that no matter what happened, that it was always North, the Northumberland would remain in the name. And it goes back as far as 1848, from what I'm able to see here.
Oh, it even goes back even farther. In fact, it's really interesting. Back when Sir Frederick Haldimand was first surveying this area back in the 18th century, when it was first named, even then it was just a matter of some cabins that were along the lakeshore. So they came along, they started surveying it out. They started to establish these areas. And originally, John Graves Simcoe had really very uncreative names, but Northumberland goes back right to the late 18th, early 19th century. So yeah, it's absolutely significant for this area. And we've held that name for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. That's where Haldimand Township, by the way, gets its name from, is from Sir Frederick Haldimand. Anyway, yeah, really, really fascinating in that regard. But going back to James Cockburn, I mean, here's really fascinating man. Born February 13th, 1819 in Berwick-on-Tweed, comes to Canada in 1832. His father was a shopkeeper in Berwick-upon-Tweed, was considered fairly wealthy. Shopkeepers did fairly well in those days.
Mm-hmm.
But on the trip across, he and two of the servants that they brought died of cholera. And in fact, his father's buried in Montreal along with the two servants. So having just lost her husband, she's got her kids and James, and they come to Toronto, but she writes ahead to Bishop Strawn, John Strawn, and he gets her a position as a teacher in a girls' school and sort of takes her under his wing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when James is able to go off to school to Upper Canada College. Now, that was a very elite private school, as mm-hmm. it is today. And from there, he goes from there to study law at U of T. He graduates in 1845. And again, you see now he's moving in a certain circle. He knows John Strawn. His mother is working for a school that Strawn is supervising. So he's moving in the very much the
upper
family,
echelons
family
of
compact,
society.
You bet. So who does he come and join down here for a law practice is Darcy Bolton. So, of course, the Boltons, again, another big family compact name, and sets up a law practice down in Victoria Hall.
Is that right?
Yeah. Now, at that time, Victoria Hall wasn't built yet, but they had their law practice on the main street. Sorry. They had their law practice on the main street. He marries Isabella Patterson, who, again, was a very well-to-do family in York Mills. They lived in Hogs Hollow, which is where the famous tavern is at the bottom there. If anybody that goes down in the Hogs Hollow at York Mills and Yonge Street mm-hmm. would know that area. But anyway,
that's where the mill's located.
That's
isn't
right.
It? That's the mill restaurant.
The mill restaurant. Right. So that's where she grew up, and they get married. They have a son and two daughters. And in 1862, though, she dies of consumption, and.
That's tuberculosis for most folks who don't know.
Very, very sad. She had been away from him for a number of years because she was so sick. She had to go home and be looked after because by that point he was involved in politics. He went into politics in 1855 and 56, served on municipal council. In those days, there were only one-year terms.
Mm-hmm.
Was instrumental in a couple of things. First of all, he made sure that the Victoria Hall got finished. He was the one that negotiated the deal. He had been the town lawyer before that. But that was one of the big things was it was a financial debacle, and he got all the paperwork done. The Burnetts, who were building it, said, you know, we're done. We're walking away. He said, no, let's finish it. He also was the one who passed the motion for the cupola on the top with the clock in it. That was something that he pushed through. Anyway, by 1856, he's a well-known politician. He had also been doing land deals. You know where Midtown Mall is, where the No Frills?
Mm-hmm.
That was property that he flipped over. He helped develop Campbellford with his brother up in that area, sold lots up there to help establish Campbellford. He sold insurance as well as doing law. I mean, that was pretty standard, though, in those days. All lawyers kind of did that kind of thing.
But yeah, but again, you're talking about estate planning. You're talking about everything. Them planning for afterwards. So that's when life insurance would come into play. We're going to take a quick break, listeners. We're going to be right back. You're listening to The Drive Time right here. We're talking about the history of Northumberland County. We're talking about James Colburn right now. Stick around. There's so much more coming up. It is Canada Day right here at Northumberland 89.7. We'll be right back.
Come join me, Ariel, and all my friends this summer live at the Sculthorpe Theatre at the Cameco Capital Arts Centre for an underwater adventure. You don't want to miss out on your chance to see a Capital Kids production of The Little Mermaid Jr., July 7th to the 12th.
To order tickets and for more information, call the Capital Theatre box office at 905-885-1071 or visit our website at www.capitaltheatre.com. Sponsored by Spark, smart toys for cool kids.
I just got married, and I wanted to leave my collection of flannel shirts to my new wife, Lucille, in case of an unfortunate hunting accident. But my cousin Bob was a lousy shot, let me tell you. Jim McGrath made it easy to make a will so that my three previous wives could not touch my stuff. He's been lawyering for 30 years, and let me tell you, he knows what he's doing. Plus, he's a real nice guy. Call Jim McGrath today at 905-373-1999 and tell him Cletus sent you.
ExploreNet is proud to offer Northumberland County residents fast, reliable, high-speed internet today. Plus, with brand new LTE service on the way, we will be offering download speeds up to 25 megs and 500 gigs of data. Yep, you heard that right. City speeds and data with plans starting at around $50. ExploreNet offers affordable, high-speed internet that connects you to what matters. Call your local ExploreNet dealer, United TV in Cobourg, to hear more. 905-372-6831.
The story you are about to hear is true.
Ed White fixed my refrigerator.
And?
He did a great job. Now I don't need to buy a new fridge. And if I don't get a new fridge, then I won't need a whole new kitchen to go with it. So my guy is saying Ed White saved him $20,000.
Guys, save 20 grand. Call Ed White Appliance Service in Port Hope at 905-885-7109.
Yes, it is worth fixing.
Starting your own business is an exciting time in your life, but are you aware of your legal responsibilities as a business owner? Jim McGrath specializes in business law and knows what needs to be done to protect you and your investment. Jim has been a lawyer for over 30 years and understands the law, so you don't have to. As a local resident and an entrepreneur himself, Jim McGrath is a trusted source in our community for business owners just like you. Call 905-373-1999 and let Jim McGrath give you the legal peace of mind you need.
And welcome back to The Drive Time, everybody. I'm Dave Glover. With me is Rob Washburn. He is a professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College, and we are talking about the great things about Canada. We're focusing right now on, of course, what is West Northumberland, what became, Cobourg and Port Hope and all of those great things. Now, one of the things I've talked about a couple of times in the early part of today's show was the proposal that Cobourg be named the capital city of Canada. And can we talk a bit about that?
Yeah, that's really interesting. Back at that particular time when they were looking for a capital, Cobourg was a very sophisticated town. It's hard to put your head around it in this particular time, but we had many, many social institutions. We had booming businesses. We were very vibrant. The harbor was a major port. And there was a real sense that things were happening. And two things came out of that sort of optimism of the mid-19th century. One was the building of the railway to Peterborough, which was really, really important. But the second thing was creating a municipal building that would be worthy of a capital city. And that's why Victoria Hall got created. I mean, when you think about it, it proportionate to what the town became, it sort of seems really large. But the idea was that everybody locally believed, hand on a Bible, that this was going to be picked as the center. And what it came down to was between Toronto, York, and Kingston were the other two choices. But there was serious talk and serious lobbying going on around trying to get Cobourg to be. And that's why Victoria Hall was built the way that it was, with the courts and all that stuff.
Wow, that's incredible. Now, I had always assumed that one of the reasons it wasn't chosen as the capital was because of its proximity to the U.S., because we're a lot closer. Although Kingston is considerably closer to the U.S., right, with the Thousand Island connection.
And again, but it wasn't chosen, was it? So, no. I mean, Toronto was chosen for a lot of reasons that, you know, are ancillary to what we're talking about. But, yeah, I think there was this real sense that we were very cosmopolitan. We had a library. They were called mechanical institutes back in those days, but we had that kind of thing. We had a lot of social organization.
Was Victoria College for women already here at the time?
Victoria College was thriving at that time. Okay. When you talk about it as a girls' school,
yeah,
that was only a part of it for a very, very short time. Victoria College actually was built in June of 1836. It cost $40,000. In 1841, it was a Methodist school at first. It was for young girls, and then it became a co-ed school. In 1841, they called it Victoria College, and then it became Victoria University. And then in 1892, they closed it down, and it became part of the colleges that made up the University of Toronto.
Right.
And it went back to being called Victoria College at that time. But yeah, it was Victoria College was a huge draw. There were other schools, Faraday School for Girls, a very big finishing school, which the building still exists just down on, I think it's Henry Street. But it was a major school at that time as well. But yeah, we were a thriving community. Hard to sort of put your head around when you look at mm-hmm. look around. But no, a lot of people knew about this. I mean, the Prince of Wales came to visit here.
Yeah, well, he opened Victoria Hall.
That's right.
Correct,
so yeah. We were a major center.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the other things that you told me during the break, which I was like gobsmacked about, was the possibility, and it was reported in the Coburg Star, that it was the first place that a bicycle was ridden, or a bicycle race?
No, it was actually the first bicycle ridden in Canada, according to the Coburg Sentinel Star on August 7th, 1908. There was a Dr. Gray. They were up at the train station in 1866. A guy was coming through with a bicycle, and he got off the train, and they were absolutely fascinated. He was staying for a couple of days, and Dr. Gray learned to ride the bike in those 3 or 4 days where the guy was staying over, and they were riding it up and down the streets, and there were reports about it, and those reports made their way through, and then the Sentinel Star republished the story on August 7th, 1908, about this riding of the bicycle back in 1866.
Well, there you go. So that's a great tie-in for tonight's event down at the Loft. Of course, the film is Marinoni, and it's the story of a man who, you know, bikes are a huge part of his life, you know, and he gets ill, and then at one point he decides he's going to get back on the bike. I mean, here's a guy who's essentially a bicycle sculptor, and he does a lot of his own custom bikes, as they say. And so that's the story. The gentleman's name is Marinoni. He is a Canadian immigrant. Ultimate Canadian story here, folks. Tony Girardin is the director, and we were lucky enough to have him in the studio this afternoon. So, Tony, thanks for coming in. And by the way, if you have the evening off and you are interested in an extremely interesting story, and it's not a boring sports story, folks. This is a really sort of about a guy who's overcomes challenges, sort of the last phases of his life. He wants to do this film primarily for his posterity, but it's an incredible story. It's called Marinoni. It's on at the Loft tonight, and I believe the doors open at 7:30 p.m. this evening. The Loft is located on Division Street in Hardin House. It's upstairs from Hardin House. So there you go, a nice plug for those guys. A nice tie-in, actually, with the bicycle story. Oh, the first time a bicycle was ridden in Canada.
That's what incredible. They say. Now, if you know, who knows, but certainly that's what the Sentinel Star was trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a good time to go down to that movie, because when you come out of that, it'll be just in time for the fireworks.
Absolutely.
And you'll be right downtown, so mm-hmm. You can really enjoy those.
Well, that's something Michelle and I were talking about earlier, because I think last year they estimated, well, over the weekend, there's approximately 90,000 people that will come to Coburg for the Waterfront Festival. It's one of the largest Canada Day festivals in the entire country. And I know the light show that is put on for Canada Day is, if not the largest, one of the largest in Ontario, and I believe it's in the top 10 across the country.
Well, it's fascinating because back when I was a reporter at the Coburg Star, I remember writing stories about the Waterfront Festival. And at that time, outside of Ottawa, it was the largest Canada Day celebration mm-hmm. in the province. So, yeah, it's an amazing thing we've got here. It's an amazing thing. I mean, even with the bad weather today, I was took my wife and my daughter down to the waterfront for them to walk around, and it was just packed, just packed.
And it's not even really officially open, or is today the first day?
No, today's the first day, but I mean, the weather wasn't that great earlier today, and yet it was just busy like you wouldn't believe.
Well, and what are we looking at for weather for the next few days? Well, tomorrow it's going to be 22 degrees and sunny, Friday 24 and sunny, Saturday only a 30% chance of showers on Saturday, but 25 degrees is the high, and Sunday 27 degrees. So we are looking forward to a really, really nice weekend. Tonight, however, partly cloudy, clearing after midnight, and it looks as though the storms have gone. There were some risks of thunderstorms this afternoon, but all of that has passed us, and it should be a wonderfully sunny day. Well, relatively, they're saying Saturday, again, partly cloudy, 30% chance of showers, because the Skyhawks are supposed to drop in on Saturday.
Well, and that's a big draw. Mm-hmm. That's huge. I don't know if you've ever seen them do their thing, but
oh, I have.
Quite amazing.
I have.
Amazing.
Well, again, as a merchant on the downtown during Canada Day, especially in the middle of the day, sometimes it was harder to get away, but to check out the Skyhawks, we were always there. Mm-hmm. Just an incredible aerial performance by the guys from the Canadian Armed Forces. So hats off to them. If I don't see you this weekend, we'll see you the next time you're here. They're here very often. We actually, I think because of our proximity to Trenton Air Force Base, they really sort of, and I hate to use this term, but they really kind of throw us a bone there, because we've had the Skyhawks. We've also had the flyover by the Snowbirds on more than one occasion.
Definitely.
I mean, I think in the many years that I've been here in Coburg, I think I've seen the Snowbirds probably half a dozen times.
No kidding.
And it's just incredible.
Oh, they are.
But again, that's what it is, West Northumberland. And one of the great things about this community, I mean, and you talked about it, you alluded to it, I mean, they were aspiring for great and wonderful things. Unfortunately, a lot of economic things happened with regards to the railroad and so many other things that happened, and we just kind of missed the boat. Something else that we missed the boat on, though, Port Hope being called Toronto. Apparently, they were going to call Port Hope Toronto.
Oh,
you were telling me that during the break.
Incredible. Yeah, at one point, they were looking at changing the name. Prior to it being called Port Hope, and one of the names that they were looking at was Toronto. That was back in 1818 when they actually adopted that name. Up until then, it was known as Smith's Creek. After Peter Smith, who was the fur trader, who had a cabin near the Ganaraska River back in 1788, and he was really the founder. And then when the Loyalists started arriving in 1793, that's when it started to expand and grow. And it was also between Smith and a guy by the name of Jonathan Walton, who Walton Street.
Well, obviously Walton Street, yeah.
Yep, and they decided to build a mill in 1797, and away they went. And by 1800, the town was being plotted out. And like I said, by 1818, they were changing the name, looked at Toronto, passed on that and called it Port Hope. Became a police village, police board village in 1834, and then was incorporated into a town in 1850. So, yeah, interesting, eh?
Well, and Port Hope has given so much to the world. One of the things Port Hope has given to the world is, of course, James Strachan, the man who wrote...
Scrivener?
Scrivener, I apologize, Mr. Sorry. Scrivener. My goodness, and I'm reading it here, folks. This is the insanity. So I've got a copy right here of the hymn, What a Friend We Have in Jesus. And I did get a request yesterday that if we were talking about West Northumberland and Coburg and Port Hope, that I do at least play this. So this song going out by request here is What a Friend We Have in Jesus from James Scrivener, Port Hope native, and what a gift to the world.
What a friend we have in Jesus, all our sins and griefs to bear. What a privilege to carry everything to God in prayer. Peace we often forfeit. Oh, what needless pain we bear, all because we do not carry everything to God in prayer. Have we tried
friend so faithful, who will all our sorrow share. Jesus knows our every weakness, so take it to the Lord in prayer. Are we weak and heavy laden? Cumbered with a load of care? Precious Savior, still our refuge. Take it to the Lord in prayer. Friends despise, forsake thee. Take it to the Lord in prayer. In his arms he'll take and shield thee. Thou wilt find a solace there. Jesus, take it to the Lord in prayer.
And that was What a Friend We Have in Jesus, written by Port Hope's very own James Scrivener. The Scrivener Monument is down there as well in Port Hope, if you want to check that out anytime. I believe it's down by the Ganarasca River, isn't it?
That's correct.
So, again, always a pleasure to... And by the way, I'm very happy to be able to bring this show to you today, by the way, folks. Every day, you know, we come on here, I'm yelling, you and I are usually talking about politics and, you know, getting people's blood boiling. It's just nice to be able to take a day off and talk about what a great country we have. And one of the reasons that it's so great is because of the people that we have come from. People like James Colburn, for instance. So hats off to us for that. And I hope you're enjoying your Canada Day. And make sure you don't leave those burgers on the grill too long, though, folks. I know it's around dinner time right now if you're sitting at home listening. Thanks for listening to us, by the way. If you do have a song you'd like us to play, we will play, but we are going to continue with our conversation. Where were we, Rob?
Well, Dave, I think we were going to talk about some celebrities. Hard to believe, but there are some very, very famous people who were born in Cobourg. Marie Dressler, one we all know about, but also a woman by the name of Beatrice Lilly, born May 29th, 1894. She was considered the funniest woman in the world. She was vaudevillian. She was born here, grew up in Toronto. She long-time stage performer, very, very beautiful woman, amazing talent, played throughout the world. And I don't know if you remember the movie Thoroughly Modern Millionaire.
Yes, absolutely.
1967.
Yeah. Yep.
She actually appeared in that. That was her last movie. That was the last performance she ever gave. Yeah. And another one, Perry Mucci, born July 11th, 1977. Appeared in not so famous movies, but certainly Grey Gardens, Sidekick, and Blood Creek. Susie Oliver, born March 27th, 1976, is from Cobourg. She was a model, and she did a lot of minor roles in film. David Well, born in 1870 in Cobourg, was an actor and a director. Did a number of silent films, Angels of the Bowers, and
but Angels, is that Angel of the Bowery?
Yes, Angel of the Bowery.
You know the movie.
Oh, cool!
I do know that. I've seen
Holy cow! Anyway, 1911, but famous for his movie Captain Swift. Do you remember that one at all? It's hard to know what you do and don't know, Dave.
No, that one I don't know, but okay. I do remember the other one about the Bowery, which is a great movie.
Also, Lawrence E. Johnson, born 1869, was a very famous playwright, wrote a number of plays, died in 1933.
Mm-hmm.
Charles Dickens stopped in Cobourg. No kidding. Charles Dickens, on his North American tour, stopped in Cobourg on March 9th, 1842, wrote it in his diary, said we were an enchanting town. But he was en route from Toronto to Kingston. Something had happened. They had to bring the boat in. So he wandered around the main streets and wrote about it in his diary.
And the great part about that story is that the main street he wandered around, for the most part,
yes,
is still there.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, that's another great thing. I mean, Port Hope has this beautiful heritage downtown, and nobody can take that away from them. But one of the things that I love about both Cobourg and Port Hope is the fact that we have our original main streets, our original downtown buildings. For the most part, I think in Cobourg it's about 85% original structures down there. So yep. Things is, I mean, built around 1835. We know Somerville's, that block there where the Human yep. Bean Building is, they were built yep. in 1835. And so many along the block. So again, those buildings were there. Charles Dickens may have walked by the butcher shop and may have even gone in there to buy a side of beef. Who knows?
Okay, Dave.
Probably not.
Not. But you keep thinking that. Sounds like fun.
Well, one of the things we talked about with James Coburn, of course, was how he was voted as to be the very first Speaker of the House of Commons. And, I mean, you can't take that away from somebody, being the first anything, quite frankly.
Well, you know what? This is the part. You know that I'm involved with the James Coburn Society and the stuff that we do down there. And one of the things that is absolutely drives me crazy is that this guy was silent. Didn't speak a lot, didn't talk a lot in the House of Commons. But you read people's accounts of him, every time it's effusive. It's what a great man he was, what an incredibly smart man he was. On his tombstone, there was a rooster carved in. And a rooster was a sign in those days of vigilance. And when they got his tombstone redone because it was falling apart, they put the rooster back in. And I think that that's such an incredible tribute to this man, because the more reading I do about him and the more research that I do about him, the more I realize he was such an astute man. Like, figure it this way. You have 300 people come down to your door. How popular do you have to have 300 people come from a tavern, walk down, they've signed a petition, they knock on your door at midnight, and they say, "We want you to run." And he comes out and he stands on his porch. He lived, by the way, right across from St. Peter's Church. Where the Arlington Hotel would eventually be. But that whole strip of land right down to Queen Street, he owned that. And he had his house in the front. And he stood on the porch and he spoke to those 300 people. And he said, "I will be your candidate." And, you know, after all his affiliations with the Family Compact, with Darcy Bolton, with Upper Canada College, who did he run for? He didn't run for
the Tories.
He ran as a reformer and got elected and wiped out the Postmaster General, Sidney Smith, buried him. And went down and was part of George Brown's original Reform Party. Now, here again, to show you how smart a politician he was, when the militia bill came down and there was all that fight over the militia bill, what did he say? MacDonald says to him, "Come across, join me. I need you on my team." He says, "Sure, I'll come across." Comes across, and he becomes the Solicitor General. That meant that in 1864, when they got together for the Quebec Conference, he was in Quebec. He was part of those 3 weeks discussions that formed this country. He was in the background. He was MacDonald's legal whiz. And again, no paper, no great speeches, but he was in the background putting things together. And eventually, after he was the first Speaker of the House, by which he was elected unanimously,
mm-hmm.
Well-loved, held the position as long as he held office. And then when he finally became ill in the late 1870s, and he couldn't be a politician, he was then made a commissioner, and he brought together all of the statutes from all the provinces into the Dominion of Canada statutes. An amazing job. He died before it got finished, and some others had to finish it for him. But the Alexander Mackenzie would go on to become Prime Minister and also was the Minister of Justice at that time, wrote beautiful things in his memoirs about Coburn and what a great man he was and what incredible contributions mm-hmm. he made.
The original arbiter of sober second thought, from the sounds of it. I mean, like a typical lawyer, right? You listen with both ears. You don't speak when you don't need to. And you only say what you need to say.
Absolutely.
You don't need to go beyond what you need to say. I wish I'd learned that lesson myself a few times. But
But a great man, a truly great man. And I hope that with the upcoming 150th celebration of our country, that we can start to recognize people like him. I mean, certainly he's not the George Brown or the Darcy McGee or Sir John Cartier. Cartier or all these great names that we know. He was definitely someone who was a more quiet. But yet these there were many of them that were involved. And, you know, They've made great contributions, and I think we should be particularly proud of Coburn because, you know, to be the first Speaker of the House of Commons is an incredible, incredible thing. And, you know, we should celebrate it more in my mind.
But. Well, we should. And, of course, we have that holiday. We call it James Coburn Day here.
You bet.
You know, and that's the I guess was Victoria Day. Right now it's James Coburn Day.
Yep, and then they tried to call it Simcoe Day. There's a whole bunch of stuff. But
there's Simcoe Day in Toronto. They do call it Simcoe Day in Toronto, and I think a few other communities. I guess if you have a direct connection in your community to a father of Confederation, it's sort of incumbent upon you to name the holiday for that person.
No, it was there was a big panic. They were going to call it Simcoe Day across the province, and I went to council in 1997 and started pushing it in 1998. It got named James Coburn Day, and there was Bytown, Colonel By Day in Ottawa, McLaughlin Day in Oshawa. Mm-hmm. And since that time, a lot of municipalities have picked historic figures from their areas and named the various days after that. But we were one of the first, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, been working on this a long time, Dave.
Well, and again, you know, not a lot of communities in this country, none in the West, I would say, except perhaps in Louis Riel's part of the West, really can pinpoint somebody from their community who is so directly involved in the creations, and one of the architects, if you will, of our Confederation.
Well, it's incredible. Coburn gave 92 decisions in his brief time, but all of them were seminal decisions around shaping how the House of Commons would be run, the rules, you know, all that kind of stuff. And they're dry as Melba toast to read. Seriously, he was a very good lawyer. But they were instrumental in setting about how our parliament was to function. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, that's pioneering stuff when you think about it, you know.
Well, it's because of men like him that we didn't end up adopting the American model, for instance. It's because of him that we ended up being a very different country, because we are a very different country to our neighbors to the south. We're going to take another quick break. We're going to come right back. Speaking of lawyers.
Selling a home. Real estate law. Home inspections. Realtors. Home staging. Home improvements. Mortgage financing. Real estate marketing. Real estate technologies. Buying a home. Join Dale Bryant and Dave Smith every Thursday morning from 11 till noon on Reality Realty, Northumberland 89.7's Real Estate Talk. Join us as we take on, talk about, and interview guests on all things real estate. That's Reality Realty, Thursday mornings, 11 till noon, on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
For over 35 years, Northumberland Security Incorporated has been providing everything necessary for physical and electronic security. From locks, alarms, safes, access control to surveillance systems, and handicap door operators. We are virtually a one-stop personal and property security center, operating from Pickering to Peterborough to Picton and everywhere in between. Visit us at 22 King Street West in Cobourg, online at northumberlandsecurity.com, or call 905-372-8951, the professional security team.
We've gone and done it again. You agreed to plan your company's dinner party. Where will you hold it this year? Of course, there's nowhere better to hold large events than at the Legion Hall in Cobourg. Hold your receptions and private parties at the Legion Hall, and you can get them catered. Call Shelley at 905-372-6554 and book the Legion for your event today. And call Sue at 905-342-2087 for catering.
The Royal Canadian Legion, Branch 133, is located at 136 Orr Street in Cobourg. Call 905-372-2231 and become a member today.
Jim McGrath understands that as much as we don't want to talk about it, wills and estate planning is a responsible thing to do for you and your family. With his help, you can reflect on your values and wishes and have a legal direction to let others know what kind of health and personal care you would want if you could not speak for yourself. Jim McGrath has been a lawyer for over 30 years, and he understands the law, so you don't have to. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones to call Jim McGrath today at 905-373-1999.
Welcome back to The Drive Time, everybody. This is Northumberland 89.7 CFWN-FM on your FM dial. Northumberland897.ca. If you're listening to us worldwide, if you're listening to us, you already know that. You can send me a tweet at Legant66 or tweet the station at TrulyLocal897. And you can also become a Facebook friend. That's right. Join them at facebook.com/Northumberland897. We're back with Rob Washburn. Now, one of the things you and I talked about during the break was one of the first, was it a Molson's Brewery or the first brewery that was opened? Can we talk about that?
Yeah, for sure. Thomas Molson in 1851 set up a brewery at on Jocelyn Street.
In Port Hope.
In Port Hope, Cavan and Jocelyn Street. And there was an existing distillery and sawmill and stave factory down there. He bought it, and they started producing malt barley, which they put onto ships in Port Hope Harbor and shipped down to Montreal to the family brewery where they were producing Molson beer. But they also produced some beer locally, and it carried on. Thomas Molson then passed away, sold it to his family. They kept it for a little bit longer, and then it went out of the family. But it was a huge complex. It was actually called Molson Mills.
Really?
Because it was such a large complex. But interesting enough, you remember Ian Angus, who we interviewed some time ago?
Right.
Yeah, well, he was Thomas Molson's great-grandson.
Really?
No kidding. Yeah. So, you know, another nice little piece of thread of history right there.
Absolutely. Well, and we've got so much going through this area here that we call
incredible.
The bounty of Northumberland.
Well, and you know what? We were immortalized by Catherine Partrail and Susanna Moody, you know, Backwoods of Canada and Roughing It in the Bush. I mean, they came as early settlers in Cobourg, moved up into Hamilton Township, lived on a farm in there. Susanna Moody went on and moved on, but Catherine Partrail stayed within the area. She rented a property near Rice Lake called Oaklands, also another place called Mount Ararat near Gore's Landing. If you ever read, not one of her more famous works, but one called Forest Gleanings, which are a book that was of 13 sketches of the backwoods life and the Rice Lake Plains, which speaks specifically to her time when she was living at Mount Ararat. But there's so many layers of history, Dave, into this area. It's absolutely phenomenal and you know, a very exciting place to live.
And
even
to come
today.
From.
Oh, absolutely.
And to come from. Well, and you know, so much of what we're talking about right now is something that was reflected in the Prime Minister's speech today, which was two things. You and I have talked about this. No better place in the world. I say Cobourg, Port Hope, Northumberland. He says Canada, and I agree with him wholeheartedly. Prime Minister called on Canadians to rededicate themselves to serving, to service, to volunteerism. The Governor General said the same thing, talking about volunteerism. And we know, same thing. I mean, politicians, especially in the 19th century, it was a thankless task. For the most part.
Oh, absolutely.
And it was all about people who were willing to serve, and it was about service and public service. And that's one of the most phenomenal things I have found since I moved here from Toronto. I mean, it starts with, you know, things like Waterfront Festival, which is being put on by service organizations, the Lions Club, the Rotary Club. They are the two main drivers. And you'll see the folks down there in their matching shirts and hats, and it's all about volunteerism. Even this radio station, driven by volunteers. And the fact that the Canadian government and the Governor General and the Prime Minister of Canada reflecting today on just what a giving country we are.
That festival that they put on, it takes them a year to put that together. They have committees that they'll tear that down later this week. They'll take a couple days break, and then, boom, they are back at it, and they are planning for the next year. It is a phenomenal effort that they put in, both the Lions and the Rotary Club. I don't know if you've watched, but they've been down there for almost over a week.
Yep, they have.
Setting up. And you know, you go down there, and these, again, they're all business people, retirees who have taken time out. They build all those booths, set up the tents, put the fences up. I mean, it's just incredible the amount of work that goes into organizing all that. And, you know, time and time again, you go down and talk to those vendors. Many of them have come back year after year after year because it's such a fantastic event. And they do a first-class job on it, I tell you.
No, they absolutely do. That's one of the reasons why it's, if it's not the top festival in the country in terms of Canada Day events. Obviously, the nation's capital puts on a big, huge show. But, I mean, as far as the rest of the country, I would say that the Waterfront Festival is bar none, probably one of the largest, most inclusive, too. I mean, and even this year, yeah, the admittance prices are the admittance prices. But even they've come down this year. They're actually less than they were last year. So, again, you know, understanding the economy, understanding the people that are going to be attending the event. Last year, an estimated 90,000 people attended over the entire weekend. So yep. just an incredible event. But as the Prime Minister says, and I want to echo, and it's not often you're going to hear me echo Stephen Harper, folks, but the reality is there is no better place in the world than Canada. There is no better place in Canada, in my mind, than West Northumberland County and this particular beautiful part of Ontario. This wonderful stretch along the Loyalist Parkway to the east of us here, or you can take the Trans-Canada Trail, Highway 2, the King's Highway. But for us, it's about the service. It's about giving back to the community. And I've never been in a community ever that has given back so much so often as I have with Northumberland County.
Well, Dave, I'm going to go home and write in my diary that you agreed with Stephen Harper today.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm going to put a little gold star, because it's going to be the one and only day for the next couple of months that we're going to be hearing you agree.
Well, and this that goes out to my conservative friends. And I do have conservative friends, by the way, listeners. I know some of you are probably going, yeah, right. No, my good friend James Thomas actually said to me, you know, you never give a shout out to the Prime Minister. You never give a shout out to the government when they do something good. So for you, James Thomas, today, that is a shout out for you. By the way, if you aren't doing anything this evening, we wrap at 7 o'clock tonight. But you can head on down to the Loft, which is located on Division Street at Hardin House, right next to Lakefront Utilities. And the film is Marinoni. Director Tony Jardine is going to be there at the viewing tonight. And you can meet him, you can talk to him, you can get his autograph and ask him some questions. Mr. Marinoni will not be there. But, hey, he's 70-odd years old, folks. And this is just an incredible documentary film about perseverance, about life, and about, you know what, it's also a great story about somebody who's reached their elder years and has said, you know, I'm still alive, I'm still vibrant. This guy broke a world record. Well, again, I don't want to spoil it for you. I don't even know, to be honest with you. I'm just throwing it out there. But at 75 years old, to have the resilience to do that, the ultimate Canadian story, folks. Here's Bachman Turner Overdrive with Taking Care of Business. Here it's Canada Day on Northumberland 89.7. I'm Dave Glover. I want to thank my guest, Rob Washburn, for being here for his usual installment of Consider This. Even though it's Canada Day, thank you for that, Rob. And Michelle Huseman, our sales rep, and one of the chefs from Chef's Corner, thanks for coming in and spending a little bit of the afternoon with me. Thanks to the listeners for staying with us at home. Here's BTO.
can carry.